I'm going to say 1978. That is when we moved to the Isle of Man, and I was born in Ilford in Essex. My father was working at the Times, and my mother was a novelist. They started realizing that the amount of tax they were paying was just insane, and they had a number of different tax havens lined up, and the Isle of Man was the one that got their vote.
Did they visit a few?
Yes, they did. I can't actually, off the top of my head, remember which ones, but I could have ended up abroad at that stage.
So, did they say why the Isle of Man did it for them?
I think it was just very sort of British, and I don't think they wanted to move abroad. So, they were looking for somewhere where they could be pretty close to England, and the rest of the British Isles, but at the same time, not pay too much tax.
And for you, as what, an 11-year-old, what was that like moving to the island?
It was a seismic shift.
In what way?
Well, I came from a state primary and straight into the Buchan School, where everyone was very posh. And I was, they made fun of my accent, and I was known as Joy Noland, that being how I apparently pronounced my name at that time. So yeah, it was a huge shift.
In terms of, you mentioned what your parents, you just touched upon what your parents were doing. Your father was in newspapers, but your mother also was in publishing. Well, not so much publishing, but in writing.
Writing, yes, she wrote as Charlotte Lamb, and in the end she wrote about 175 novels, mostly romance. But some suspense and historicals as well. So she was hugely successful. I mean, hugely. So that was a very long shadow for me growing up, because I also wanted to be a writer from an early age. But, I think I was wary of writing novels until really after she'd passed away. Though I did manage one before then. Yeah.
And did she read that?
Yeah, she did. I'm not sure there was a huge amount of feedback, just a kind of well done. Carry on. But no, I mostly did poetry in my late 20s. I moved into poetry and was in poetry for maybe about 8 to 10 years
Wow.
before I started taking fiction seriously.
I'd have to ask, does poetry pay the bills?
No, not even remotely, which is why I shifted to fiction, because I was actually sick of being poor.
Just going back to your mother as well, you said romance. I'm guessing when back then in the 70s and 80s, that you were talking Mills and Boon.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And she
Yeah,
was
she
employed
was
by
like
Mills
the
and Boon?
queen. Well, you don't get employed as a novelist. You're a freelancer, and you go with whichever publisher is the person publishing you at the time, which for her, it was always her dream to write for Mills and Boon. And so, that was who she was happiest with, even towards the end of her career. But when she was writing a lot of big airport books, romantic suspense novels, she really, in her diaries, you can hear that she just really missed those simple early days with Mills and Boon. She just loved a Mills and Boone.
You mentioned diaries there. So she kept diaries, did she?
Oh yeah, she kept diaries. I
Anything?
have them all. I know where all the bodies are buried.
I mean, what kind of diaries are we talking about?
Well, personal diaries. My mother's diary. I got up and did this and did
Okay.
that and had a phone call from X,
Worth publishing or?
Well, I'm working on a memoir, but it's a very slow process.
Just going back to again, when you were younger, when did you ever read your mum's stuff?
Oh yeah,
At what
absolutely.
age?
I loved them. Oh, really young, like 8, 9 years old. I was reading Mills and Boons, and I not just as they come as books. I would read her proofs. In those days they sent what were called galley proofs, which were long strips of paper with the book printed on it, so that the author could check for any typos or continuity errors. When she had finished going through it, she would give me these galley proofs, and I would read the books in that form. They would often wait breathlessly for me to pass judgment.
Now, it may surprise you to know that I've never actually read Mills and Boone. But are we when it comes to Mills and Boone, are we talking kind of Lady Chatterley's Lover, or is it really tame kind of romance?
Oh, well, it has shifted over the decades. So when my mother started writing in the early 70s, I would say it was pretty tame, though she was a very forthright lady, and she loved a bodice ripper, to be honest, and therefore she sort of introduced a lot of sex into her books quite shockingly. And she also wrote about some really problematic situations for women, like women who have suffered sexual abuse then having to try and have a relationship with a man and deal with that trauma. So she did a lot of things that had never been done before in Mills and Boone. And I think that's one of the reasons she was known as the Queen of Romance at the time.
Did it take her a while for them to go with what she was writing? Did she have to fight to get there? Or
Sometimes. But I think a lot of the time they were going on sales. And she was a multi-million bestseller across the globe. So, you know, you may or may not know that Mills and Boone is not just our little area. In fact, now it's Harlequin Mills and Boone. So it's a Canadian company bought it. You know, they're distributed all over the world.
Was it just romance? Was that all your mother wrote about?
It was mainly romance. She wrote some quite ambitious historicals, including a huge novel about Josephine, you know, Napoleon and Josephine, Mistress of Fortune. She also wrote, she loved historical novels, medieval Tudor times, as well as Regencies.
I've written myself, not to any extent to what your family has done, but to get into that situation, I adopt what I call a bunker mentality, where the outside world is completely shut off. Did your mum work like that, or did she kind of do it 9 to 5 and then, right, I'll go and make the dinner now? Or how did she operate? How did she write?
She was a very disciplined writer, so she could shut the world out, but she had 5 children. So, and was a traditional housewife other than her novels. So, especially when my brother and youngest brother and sister were still little babies, there's an apocryphal tale of her actually tying them to her legs under the table so they couldn't stray while she was writing. But she would always write a certain number of pages a day, usually 30. You know, wow. And then do the housework and dinner. Yeah, and that was quite normal for her to write 30 pages, which I think would translate at about 7,000 or 8,000 words a day.
Wow, that's incredible. Yeah. Just so we talked about your mum. Let's talk about your father, because you mentioned he was in newspapers. What was his role exactly?
When he retired in 78, he was chief sub-editor on the Times, but he'd come from a working class miner's background in Folkestone, where he became tea boy on the Folkestone Herald when he was, I think, 14.
Wow.
And then just rose through the ranks. Yeah, self-educated. So, yeah.
Was there a particular area of journalism that he covered? You know, politics?
Politics mainly. In his obituary, I remember he was the gentleman from the Times who always went to get the New Year's honours list from Downing Street. So it was a huge thing. You know, he had reinvented himself, basically, and you would never have known his humble origins because he had developed this very, very plummy accent to go with it so that no one would question him, you know.
So very sadly, he passed away about 4 or 5 years ago, didn't he?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, so obviously you must have been very fond of both, because I think your mother's been, I think, 10, 20 years now, something?
Oh, longer.
Longer.
Yeah, she died in 2000.
Wow. But you must be very proud of, you know, your parents and the way that they raised you and your brothers and sisters.
Yes, I mean, their achievements were amazing. And as I said, it was a pretty long shadow for myself as a writer to come up, knowing there was always this massive you know, monolithic sort of writer in the family. But if you do the maths, I'm actually pretty close to her achievement now.
Wow.
Because I've written about 70 novels and most of mine are 100,000 words, but her novels are only 50 to 55,000.
Wow.
mostly. So, you know, in sheer maths numbers, I'm getting close to where she was.
So, okay, let's talk about you now, because as I say, you've taken this on from your mother. And just before I get to you, actually, I believe your sister was also writing as well, wasn't it? Was it Sarah?
Yes, Sarah, yes. I think she wrote 22 novels for Mills and Boone.
Wow. So it is definitely in the family.
Yeah, definitely.
So how did you get involved? I mean, obviously it's there, but how did you become published?
It's really to do with my snooker career, because in my early to mid-20s, I became a snooker player.
I was going to come to that because, let's talk about that now.
Related.
Yeah, okay, let's talk about that before we get to your writing then, because
I believe,
had a world ranking.
I did. I was 24th in the world. I think I was seeded 24th at the 1991 World Championships for women's snooker.
That's incredible. So how did that come about, and where did your snooker career go, and did that pay the bills?
No, that didn't pay the bills, unfortunately, but it was great fun.
Okay.
That is a very complicated question about how that came about.
Okay.
I suppose I realised just going into pubs and playing pool with my boyfriend, later husband, I was quite skilled at playing pool. And somebody said, you should try snooker. And I went to a snooker club and I made a 25 break straight off, which is very unusual.
Wow.
And I thought, well, you know, I'm not as good as these blokes, but I might be good against other women. And I discovered that there was a women's world circuit, and all the games, of course, were across, you know, on the mainland. Mm. So I would have to travel, and I managed to get a grant from the Isle of Man Sports Council to fund my travel.
And how long did this go on for?
I'm not actually sure, maybe 5 years, maybe longer, 8 years, I'm not sure, but quite a long time.
Okay, did you win any tournaments, or, you know, was there any success along the way?
I won a plate competition once, which is the competition for people who got knocked out in the early rounds. But no, I did all right. I was always a kind of also-ran player. I was good, but not brilliant. I kind of hit a ceiling. And in 1994, after a bit of a barney with the local snooker people, I quit snooker forever and started writing. And that is how that came about, the writing, because I decided I was going to write a novel about women's snooker. And that's how I got into novel writing.
And did you write one?
Yeah, it's called Kissing the Pink.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. So I wrote a poem about, I think I had a poem in London Magazine, and in the biog at the back, you know, it said, Jane Holland, a snooker player, you know, and I was then headhunted by tons of agents. And in the end, I went with Curtis Brown. That didn't last very long, unfortunately, as the agent retired soon after. So, and I moved on. But, she managed to sell my book to SEPTA, and that was the start of my writing career.
And so did that then start paying the bills, if you don't mind me asking, you know, with the writing?
It wasn't a huge seller, but it taught me how to write novels, really. And I went on, and after maybe 10 years after that, I found myself another agent. So there's a moral there, which is, if you have an agent, make sure you get another one before leaving the first one, because it's very hard to get an agent. And I actually hooked up with my mother's old agent at Luigi Bonomi Associates. And together we have now sold dozens and dozens of novels to publishers. So that
titles.
Was a great
team. You're talking about titles there, aren't you? Not in total volume, but you've told dozens and dozens of titles.
Yes.
It just.
Yes, that's what I meant. Yeah, sorry.
It only sounded like you'd only sold a few dozen books.
No. Thankfully, no. No, I've sold dozens of titles with LBA, and I'm really, really pleased about that partnership.
So, becoming a novelist, was that self-taught? I know it's in the family, but you know, is it something that you learnt along the way? It's not something you can go and study, for example, you know, do 3 years at university, you know, becoming a novelist.
Well, people do, especially now, people seem to think you need a creative writing degree in order to do creative writing. Mm-hmm. But I came from the school of read books, and that's how you work out how to do it. And that's basically what I did. Though I think, you know, that you learn by practice. So, you know, the more novels I wrote, the better I got at writing novels. And now I wish I could do it in my sleep, because that would save a lot of time and leave more time for watching box sets. But in fact, you know, I do find it really quite easy to write novels now. I trot them out in 3 to 4 months a piece, 100,000 worders. And they're usually very well received.
Wow. So take me from the journey then, from blank page to the bookshelf. How do you get it, come up with an idea? How do you progress that idea? Do you have to keep rewriting? How does that work?
There are so many things you can write novels about. I'm always baffled when people say, I don't know what to write a novel about. You know, you can literally write about anything. All you need is a beginning, a middle, and an end.
But the thing is, Jane, making it good, though. Anyone can do that, but actually making it so people want to read it.
Okay. I once read something heard something that Lee Child said about this, which was how to write a page turner. And Lee Child said that when he was working in television, I think he worked in ITV or something like that, they would always make sure that in the moment before the commercial break, there was a question of some kind in the television programme, so that people would come back to find out what went on. And in fact, one of the ways this happened was they would actually ask a question on the screen. So they would say, who won the World Cup in such and such a year? And then after the commercial break, they tell you who it was. So that was how they hooked people, because people would think, oh, who was that? And then they would wait to see. And that was how they kept you from turning over during the commercials.
And is that how go on.
Yes, you transfer it to novels. So you just transfer that idea of asking a question to novel writing. So at the end of every chapter or every scene, if you're breaking your chapter into sections, you have to ask a question. So that could be a phone rings. Next chapter, you answer the phone. So the person reading the book thinks, oh, the phone's ringing. Who can that be? And, you know, especially if it's at a tense moment in a thriller, you want to know who it is. And, you know, maybe someone's ringing with the answer to a question. Maybe someone's ringing to say somebody's dead. So that's how you do it. You just ask a question of some kind in your writing.
And the process, you mentioned before, but generally, how long does it take for you to complete a novel?
Yeah, about 3 to 4 months, depending how lazy I am.
Okay.
So if I write, it's 100,000 words, so 3 months, 90 days average, you know. So 1,000 just over 1,000 words a day, every single day, that'll do it. And if I miss a few days, I just have to write more and catch up.
And is there such a thing as writer's block?
Not in my universe.
Oh, okay.
I don't believe in writer's block. I believe in poet's block.
Okay.
I think it is possible to be blocked as a poet, and maybe that also translates to more literary writers. But I am not a literary writer. I'm a commercial fiction writer, which means, you know, I'm all about the readership. I'm about entertaining people. And so, you know, and also I'm perhaps don't suffer from block because I just love writing. I just love a sentence. So I'm constantly fascinated by the process of writing my own novels. You know, so I sit down with a will most days and a cup of coffee and maybe a bun. I just really enjoy it. I just still really enjoy it.
The interesting thing is that you said, well, it's all interesting, of course, but the thing that interests me is that you say you do 1,000 words a day. Do you have to, before that 1,000, do you actually have to read back what you've already written so you know where you're going with the next 1,000 words? Or can you just pick it up every day?
Yes, I just pick it up every day.
That's amazing.
If you miss a day or a few days or a week or something, you might need to just glance at what you previously had. But if you're writing every day, you're constantly in touch. So what I always suggest to people who are trying to write a novel and have not succeeded is you have to do something every single day that keeps you in touch with the narrative. So you have to be looking at what you've written or making notes about it or actually writing something. Even if it's only 100 words, like a paragraph, you have kept in touch with your narrative. It's when you break and you leave a gap that things go wrong and then books start feeling weird because it's a bit like somebody knitting a scarf or a jumper. There's a tension that has to be maintained in the knitting so that, you know, you don't get one bit that's tight and one bit that's weirdly stretchy. And it's the same with a novel. So you're sort of knitting your narrative. You have to keep the tension at the same level the whole way. You know, you have to hold the whole arc in your head. And it's really hard to do that if you keep skipping days. So I make sure I write every single day.
And when you start writing, do you know what the ending is going to be? Or does the ending just come to you as you're going through the pages?
No, I always know what the ending will be because I plan it. Yeah, no, I wasted a lot of time in my early years as a novelist just winging it and thinking, well, you know, I want it to be about X, Y, Z, but not putting anything down on paper. But now I write a synopsis, so a plan of the book, not chapter one, chapter two, chapter three, though I do that sometimes. Mainly, you know, this happens, that happens, and the other happens. And when I do that, more ideas will come to me while I'm writing that synopsis because I'm thinking, you know, logistically all the time, you know, will this actually work?
Just give me a little insight into what you're currently working on.
At the moment, I'm finishing up a novel called Secrets of Sycamore Hall, which is out in March. It's a self-published book, so it's easy for me to plan that because I'm what's known as a hybrid. That means I both traditionally publish with publishers and I publish my own work as well, you know, to supplement my income because publishers don't take everything, you know, and sometimes they'll say, I want this from you. And you think, well, I'd rather write this, actually. So I do both. And Secrets of Sycamore Hall is a dual timeline. So it's set in the 1880s and the 1970s, sharing the same location, though. So it's set at Sycamore Hall, which is a fictional house on Bodmin Moor. And it's all very dark, ghosts and strange happenings and so on. I can't really give more away because, you know.
On the self-publishing, I'm a personal interest there. Do you have, like I do, arguments with typesetters and printers, etc., and stuck in the middle trying to figure it all out?
No, because I only ever use Amazon. It's very, very easy. It's push of a button stuff. It's so simple. There's software. They just wash your Word document through it. You have to do a teeny bit of work, which is literally an hour or less. And then they print on demand. So when someone orders a paperback, they print it and it has nothing to do with you. You hold no stock. You pay nothing. It's all free.
And then obviously Amazon pay you.
Yeah, you don't get much for a paperback because the cost of the printing is so high. But for ebooks, you do. You get very good a return on an ebook, yes.
We're going to have to wrap things up. I just want to ask you, when did you leave the Isle of Man and how come?
I left the Isle of Man in, I think 2001. So it was after my mother had died. And I was actually at university at the time when she died. Things just kind of went belly up after that. There was a lot of turmoil in my private life. Mm. And I wanted to change. I wanted something new. And it seemed like the right decision at the time. So that was, you know, that was what happened, I suppose. And I moved to Cornwall, which is very like the island. It's a very similar sort of terrain.
When you lived in the island, you lived in Port St Mary, and also then your family lived at Crogger, which is that, look, people will know it, it looks like a castle.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so they've put a little mini train in the grounds now.
That's right.
That wasn't there in my day.
Yeah, but that was your family home here in the island.
Yeah, yeah. I never personally lived there. Yeah, I know I lived in Port St Mary and commuted to see my parents. Yes.
And I believe you've still got family living in the Isle of Man, is that right?
I do, yeah. My sister Charlotte and my brother David are both still there.
And a lot of people in the island will recognise David Holland because he's a local musician.
Indeed he is, and does great productions at the Gaiety, I believe.
You've not been back to the island?
No. I came back for the Isle of Man Literary Festival. Is it called the Literary Festival? The Isle of Man Literary Festival. And but I've never made it back for one of his productions, and I really ought to.
So just as we wrap things up, what does the future hold for Jane Holland?
More books, more box sets when I'm not working.
We must talk actually about Betty Walker as well.
Oh, yes, Betty Walker. Yes, that's my pen name for wartime sagas, which are set here in Cornwall. So massively popular. I had no idea when I wrote the first one that they would become such big sellers. But yeah, I'm on book 9 now. It's just come out, book 9. The Cornish Girls Before the Storm, which is a prequel to the whole Cornish Girls saga series.
And why is that Betty Walker? It was the same with your mum, because your mum published as Charlotte Lamb, didn't she? But she wasn't Charlotte Lamb.
No, she wasn't. She had lots of pen names, and I have lots of pen names. I have about 8 pen names. It's just Jane Holland and Betty Walker are my best known writing names, I think, at the moment. Because you have to have a different name per genre, really. People expect, you know, you wouldn't want to open a Lee Child thriller and then discover it's a romance.
Got you.
So if you shift genre, it's really best to have a new name. Publishers do it all the time. You'd be amazed.
Okay, finally then, your next book you said is out in March,
yes.
Secrets of Sycamore Hall. And people will be able to buy that?
Yeah, at Amazon, I'm afraid. But all the Betty Walker ones are available at bookshops and can be ordered, and at libraries too. I get a little bit of money per borrow, so you can borrow it from a library. No worries.